Now we're going to change pace a bit. Being the first Wednesday of the month, we've got our friend, private investigator Peter from Absolute Facts. Welcome, Peter.
Thanks for having me again, Alan.
Oh, great to have you. Now, we've got a question for you to take away, but I'll give you that at about 5 to 2. But we had a number of things last month that we sort of ran out of time on, didn't we?
Yeah, and I had a little bit of homework as well. So would you like me to start with that?
Absolutely, please.
All right. So the first one was, and I'll just go back to reiterate what we're talking about. So AMP Bank is introducing numberless debit cards for its small business and personal banking customers, amongst others, of course, in what they term as a radical makeover designed to combat fraud and scams. So they've partnered with MasterCard to deliver striking new look cards, which don't have the 16-digit number on it. They only have a 4-digit number on the back. So my homework, Alan, was that we talked about how people were going to identify themselves, and it came down to what was called, or I just said biometrics as a throwaway line, which is actually the proper term is biometric authentication, which will be one
method. That sounds terrific, but what does that mean?
I knew you'd ask me that. And just before I get to that, the other method is apparently something about tokens generated by the customer's banking app. So the AMP are pointing out, of course, that they're basically, they're not a bricks and mortar bank. They're a digital bank.
Yep.
So presumably you'll be downloading some fancy AMP app, and that will presumably generate some sort of number, which will then authorise your transaction. But getting back to the biometric authentication side of things, so basically a security process that uses a person's unique physical or behavioural characteristics to verify their identity, used to grant access to devices and systems. So some people will be with modern phones are probably semi-familiar with that sort of process. So it captures something like a fingerprint or a face print, and then stores that, and then that determines that it could be that, well, that it is that person. And from there, then you can obviously log in and transact. So there's also iris and retina scanning.
So and that's, also, scanning your eye, is it?
Yeah, iris and retina, and also voice recognition, which I think a few people might be familiar with through some of the benefit type systems and that. I think there's some voice recognition involved in that. And another one that's popped up just very recently, as to my understanding, is it's also they can apparently identify your gait, as in G-A-I-T, how you walk, can be a unique identifier as well. Yep. So when we're talking about security footage, perhaps where people, you know, put on the full the mask and the hoodie and the baseball cap, yeah. I'm hearing now that their actual walk or their gait can actually be a determining identifying factor. In other words, they say that's you because you walk like a duck or whatever the case might be. So, yeah, that was one part of my homework, Alan, about
Can I just ask you a question just before you move on to the next one? When you talk about this gate, could you ever see the day when maybe the big retail outlets use the same, that as they see you walking down, they say, oh, this bloke has been no good, we've had him before. Do you think that'll ever happen?
Well, I suppose it's along a par with the facial recognition that we've discussed before. So it's just another tool in the armour, and it's another, presumably, a tool in the armour of law enforcement when someone denies that's them and says, well, you can't prove that, you can't see my face. I go, yeah, but it's your unique, the unique way that you walk.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Because it'll be interesting to see how the courts treat that too, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and what the burden of proof will prove to have to be and things like that. I mean, obviously, you get certain people that have, you know, got an affected walk, whether it's a limp or, you know, even a walking stick, for argument's sake. So, obviously, that can be a tag for them, yeah.
Sorry.
Yep. The other half of my homework was to do with shoplifting again.
Yep.
because the headline that we sort of discussed last month was shoplifting's now apparently at around about 2% in Australia, I should say shrinkage is running at about 2% in Australia, which is a cost of about $8 billion per annum.
$8 billion, gee.
Yeah, and your challenge was to do a comparison with, say, 1998.
Yep.
So it's very difficult to get exact comparisons, but what I have come up with, firstly, as a measuring stick, the average retail shrinkage in the United States in 2022 was calculated at 1.6%. So remember, this is shrinkage.
Yeah.
Historical references suggest at about 1.5. So there's probably not a significant change in the actual shrinkage. Mm. But of course, turnover is probably quite a bit higher. So the raw number is going up every year purely because turnover is going up every year.
And prices are going up too, aren't they?
Yes, indeed. Mm. So I also found a reference, an Australian reference, which suggested only 37% of shrinkage was due to shop theft. And I found that quite intriguing. I would have thought it'd be much higher than that, to be quite honest with you, but that was a report that came out. I can't remember how long ago it was, but it was saying only 37%. So it was pointing, yep.
I don't want to cut across you, but where's the other percent? What's that?
Yes. And it was pointing more towards employees being responsible for a higher portion of the theft. Perhaps a similar proportion or maybe even a little bit higher was actually inside insider/employee/family member type theft, which, of course, and the balance would then be just simply breakage or you know, split carton loss kind of things along those lines. So... or even just write off because products are either out of date or no longer current, I guess.
So only 37% of...
Yeah, I found that a little surprising as well. But anyway, now they talk about the reported incidents of retail crime, if you like, and the graphs there show that obviously during the pandemic they took a major dip.
Yeah.
Purely because people weren't in circulation. And now the numbers are basically just getting above the pre-pandemic numbers. So we're back to where we were pre-pandemic and probably now even slightly higher, as in the number of reported retail crimes. Remembering, of course, not all retail crimes are actually discovered, let alone reported. So, so that was my homework. Alan?
Yeah. Peter, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Sure.
Thanks.
I think he knows his footprints on the sidewalk lead to where I can't stop. Go there every night. He knows his hands around a cold glass make me wanna know that body like it's mine. He got that boyish look that I like in a man. I am an architect, I'm drawing up the plans. It's like I'm 17, nobody understands. No one understands. He got my heartbeat. Understand.
He's got my heartbeat. Skipping down 16th Avenue, got that heart on me.
I mean,
wanna see what's under that attitude. Like, I want you, that's my soul. I ain't gotta tell him, I think he knows. I think he knows. I want you, that's my.
eyes, hand on my thigh, we could follow the sparks, I'll drive. Lyrical smile, indigo eyes, hand on my thigh, we could follow the sparks, I'll drive. So where we gonna go? I whisper in the dark, where we gonna go?
I'm talking to our private investigator, Peter, from Absolute Facts. Peter, I never use the self-checkouts because I'd rather try and keep the young people in jobs. But more and more people, and even one of the supermarkets I go to after, I think it's 7 o'clock at night, they put up. There'll be nobody on the cash registers. You'll have to do it yourself. But you found out a couple of funny things about it.
Yeah, I must admit I'm not a big fan of the self-checkout either, but nevertheless. Some clever person put up a video on TikTok for which they finished up getting lambasted for. And basically they figured out a bit of a cheat at the Coles self-checkout in that the scales struggle to weigh something that's very, very light. And the example that was given, Alan, was that... it was Chili's, I think, which would normally retail at $30 per, I assume that's a kilogram. But however, if you weigh them one at a time, which a bit of an arduous process, but because the scales struggled to identify a low weight, I think they just randomly put it like whatever the minimum weight is or something, and therefore if you did them individually, you'd come out way, way in front. Presumably that would apply to other things other than chili. And of course that brought the ire of, legal advice saying, well, that's basically fraud or it's intent to fraud because you're trying to not pay the full retail price. So it's dishonest behavior, but I guess maybe the pub test might have a different point of view or a different slant on that.
Well, I suppose that we can only use the equipment that's there, isn't it? We don't set how the equipment works.
No. Well, I guess there's two sides to everything, but I guess it's about the intent. So if you're intending to deliberately underpay, I guess you've got might have a bit of a problem down the track with that if you were to get caught out or challenged on it anyway.
Peter, I wonder how many times, because I saw a report only a little while ago that I forget how many percent of servos, their pumps are underpumping too.
Yes, I saw that. It was quite a disturbing shortfall as well. That was brought on by a gentleman who was filling up 4 10-litre containers and putting in what the pumps were saying were 4 or 10 litres, but they weren't anywhere near full. And then when he got them home and he actually measured how much petrol he got, there was quite a discrepancy. And I know the Bowsers get checked quite regularly, don't they, from the measurements people?
I've got a gas car and it only holds about 66 litres. And I went in with a quarter of a tank in it one day at a particular servo and I got to 67 and I thought, well, I'm going to have to stop this because it's 67 litres and had a quarter of a tank. Now, whether it was blowing air in, I don't know what happened, but it couldn't take that much of gas.
No. So I think there's probably an expectation that there'd be some tolerance or rounding error or whatever the case may be, and you can rest assured it'll be in the favour of the oil company.
But, well, when you look at it, though, I mean, all these oil companies, and I'm not having a go at them, that's where it is, but fuel's now pretty pricey. I mean, you don't want to lose half a litre.
No, and it's also a big part of the CPI and the pressure on that people are trying to get mortgage rates to come down, other than those that are investors, of course. So that you know, and the CPI is formed, you know, petrol's a big part of that component of the CPI. So, yeah.
Yeah, not good. Peter, I've just got to take another quick break and we'll be back with more. Our private investigator, Peter from Absolute Facts. Peter, you want to talk about a security guard that found himself in a bit of a problem.
Yeah, so look, I'll preface my comments by saying I'm actually a licensed investigator, not a licensed security guard or crowd controller, but we're under the same licensing division with the Victorian Police. Yeah.
All right.
So anyway, 4 p.m. Monday afternoon, 9 school-aged thugs caught on camera attacking a security guard and a bystander at Bendigo Marketplace, what's described as a sickening gang attack. And apparently the teenagers had been drinking on a bus before entering the marketplace and causing chaos, which put the centre into lockdown. They were basically drinking alcohol, playing loud music, and became violent towards the guard when he asked them to leave. So causing employees and shoppers to shelter in stores behind security doors as the guard basically got attacked and were punched and kicked, dragged to the ground, stomped on his head, and causing members of the public to try and intervene, who then also got assaulted as well. So
I see, Peter, that I heard on the way up today that there was a problem down at Southland last night at one of the theatres too.
I haven't heard about that, to be honest. So apparently police have identified or arrested even four of the nine. So presumably they'll get to the nine eventually. But, yeah, I mean, this whole teenage crime rampage and coming to my next point about...
Just before you go on, Peter, that's an absolute segue, because one of the questions we... Or a couple of questions that we've got, they'd like you to have a look at some numbers for us, but I'll give you that a bit closer to the time.
Sure. And, of course, again, as we're talking about teenage rampant crime in Victoria, if not everywhere, basically an interesting article that's come out saying... I think we've discussed this before about private security patrols in residential areas. And the article reads, terrified Brighton residents are planning to self-fund a $300,000 a year security presence to clamp down on out-of-control crime in the area. So Suburban Crime Fighting Collective has become together to fund a full-time private security control, a patrol, I beg your pardon, amid the worsening Bayside crime wave. So security patrols are planned on the streets between 7pm and 6am, seven nights a week. And basically then residents will also have the ability to contact the security company in the event of any concerns.
Peter, what can those security guards do?
Well, obviously, one of the main things is it's a deterrent for a start. And I have, I think I've discussed this before, I have been actually doing surveillance in the evenings in areas and basically being not confronted but being asked by the security personnel what I'm doing there and things like that, which is not necessarily a bad thing. So they're quite vigilant. I think just the physical deterrent of being around is possibly enough in many senses. Obviously, then they presumably could respond a little quicker to people, you know, in distressed situations. And they would also be logging and recording vehicle movements, personnel movements. And I think also in time, they would become familiar with the comings and goings from the area and sort of... It's a little bit like when you turn up in a country town, Alan, and everyone looks at you and waves at you and says, "Oh, you're a new kid in town," sort of thing. So, but that's actually not necessarily a bad thing unless you're trying to be undercover.
Peter, talk about security guards, and you said you came under the same sort of level with the Victoria Police. If you were out on hypothetical to you now, not a security guard, you're out on site, you're there to do whatever you want to do, and you see a crime happening, or the security guard, the same thing. If you ring 000, are you going to get any better response because you say, "I'm Peter, a private investigator, this is happening," than if I rang up and this is Alan Collier, who you don't know?
So just to clarify, security guards and people like myself and investigators, we're licensed through what's called the Licensing Services Division of Victoria Police.
Right.
So they control all the security guards, crowd controllers, investigators, things along those lines. To answer your question, probably not necessarily any. It just really depends on police available resources. It also depends perhaps also if they're maybe already having some sort of concentration or blitz in a certain area, or as experience has told me, if they already have a particular interest in a person of interest, if you like, and you come up with some more useful intel or evidence for them, the response time can be pretty good. But generally, I guess what they would be looking for would be for you as best as possible to document what you're seeing. Yep. And whether that's video or even just logs, you know, certain time, date, location, what you've observed. And again, remembering if you go back to people trying to describe an assailant a day later or something like that, and you get 20 different descriptions from a fluffy teddy bear to a rhinoceros sort of thing. So the whole point is then you obviously try and support what you're seeing and hearing with video or pictures at least, again, given that it may well be dark and quite, you know, difficult to identify.
But I guess...
Also, sorry. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, I guess in your case or the security guard, if you're there, to do something, you'd have some sort of diary or log sitting on your lap, wouldn't you? Because you're going to dictate, you're going to be writing down what time this person leaves or comes home for the case you're working on. So you're probably in a better place to take the details down a lot quicker, aren't you?
Yes, the miracles of a microcassette in my case. So I actually live and die by my microcassette.
Do you?
I absolutely mumble and jumble into that and then try and decipher it the next day or whatever. So again, microcassette, as far as a recording, your what you're seeing and observing, and that's particularly useful if you're trying to remember car registrations and things like that, if you read them out, and obviously use the phonetic alphabet so that you don't get confused later on between O's and Q's and everything else.
Sorry, I cut across you, Peter. I was just interested in that. Yep.
And then you got the 5 and 9 syndrome, which I must admit I suffer from as well, swapping the 5s and 9s around. So got to watch out for that one. But at the end of the day, a photo or a video, you know, it's 1,000 words, isn't it? So that's the thing. And just to finish off with what you might do, you might, at your own discretion and not put yourself too much at risk, you might loosely try and sort of keep an eye or monitor or follow where they head off to, whether it's on foot or back to a vehicle or even back to an address for that matter, if you're lucky. And of course, there's also the quite a lot of publicity about the unfortunate requirement for overusage of the police helicopter and things like that, because obviously that's one of the best ways to monitor or find, monitor and locate people that have been up to no good, particularly at night.
I don't know about your way, but they're often around my way, having a bit of a look around. Hopefully they're not looking for me.
No, absolutely, and it can be quite noisy, that police helicopter as well, but I guess if it's loitering on or near hovering on or near above you, you know that there's something afoot. So I guess the overall reason, but again, that's stretching the resources of police and budget, and you imagine the amount of fuel that goes through as well. So.
Yeah. And of course, those helicopters, after so many hours, they've got to be rebuilt and all sorts of stuff, don't they?
Yeah, they've got to be serviced and maintained and things like that. So, we've spoke about the trend of private security in local neighbourhoods. So the Brighton residents in particular seem to have had enough, and $300,000 a year. I'm not sure how many security guards they get on the ground for $300,000 a year, probably a couple. So I think the idea is that... at least the presence should be some sort of a deterrent, you'd think.
Try and move them on to someone else.
Yeah, or just if you let them know that you're monitoring them, then, you know, as you say, hopefully they move on, which is probably not too good news for the surrounding suburbs of Brighton, I wouldn't have thought. So.
And one of these kids apparently down at reportedly or allegedly said when he was on Southland last night something about, oh, well, they can't do anything to us, but... we just get out again, so you can't, it's a waste of time doing anything about us. And he just continued on what he was doing.
Yeah, I think there's endless frustration with the bail laws and things along those lines. And, you know, you feel for the police, don't you? They go to all that effort and then it doesn't necessarily go very far, particularly if they're underage.
Yeah, it doesn't. Anyway, well, better move on. I might get myself in trouble. I don't want to do that.
Yep,
I'll let you go. Sorry, Peter.
No, that's all right. Do you want me to segue into something else now?
Yes, if you like.
So there's been quite a bit of publicity, Alan, about the theft of Holden Commodores lately, all sorts of models that are getting stolen, and that there's also methodology where they clone the key or the frequency to be able to get into the vehicle.
Yeah, that seems to be a major problem, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, and the VF Commodore, I think, has been the one that's been heavily targeted lately. Mm. And, of course, then the flip side of that is how are people responding to that to try and protect themselves, which I just saw a recent article about a very big increase in sales of manual car locks.
You wouldn't have thought so, would you?
The steering wheel. Going back to using them, and basically what they're saying is they're not foolproof, and everybody knows that you can, you know, with a fair bit of effort, you can actually defeat them relatively easy. But what the mindset is if you've got one on and the car next door doesn't have one, well, then they're going to move to the easier target. So you're basically looking at that. And one humorist put up a little post on Facebook. I'm not sure whether any of your listeners have seen it, but the perfect deterrent for having your car stolen was a pair of dirty, stained underpants put over the steering wheel.
Oh, Pete. I got to take a quick break on that, Peter.
Reuben James, in my song you'll live again. And the phrases that I rhyme are just the footsteps out of time, from the time when I knew you, Reuben James. Reuben James, all the folks around Madison County cussed your name. Just a no-count sharecropping colored man who would steal anything he can. And everybody laid the blame on Reuben James. Reuben James, you still walk the furrowed fields of my mind. Faded shirt, the weathered brow, the calloused hands upon the plow. I loved you then and I love you now, Reuben James.
Flora Gray, the gossip of Madison County, died with child. And although your skin was black, you were the one that didn't turn your back on the hungry white child with no name, Reuben James. Reuben James, with your mind on my soul and a Bible in your right hand, you said, turn the other cheek, there's a better world awaiting for the meek. In my mind, these words remain from a Reuben James.
Reuben James, you still walk the furrowed field of my mind. The faded shirt, the weathered brow, the calloused hands upon the plow. I loved you then and I love you now, Reuben James.
Reuben James, one dark cloudy day that brought you from the field to your lonely pine box king, just a picture of me in the rain, just to sing one last refrain for Reuben James.
Reuben James, you still walk the furrowed fields of my mind. The faded shirt, the weathered brow, the calloused hands upon the plow. I loved you then and I love you now, Reuben James. Reuben James, the furrowed fields of my mind. The faded shirt, the weathered brow, the calloused hands upon the plow. I loved you then.
And that was Kenny Rogers, the first edition, and Reuben Jane. And the reason why I played that this afternoon, we started off just after the midday news with Dolly Parton, because Dolly's husband passed away, her husband of 60 years passed away early this week. And, of course, Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton, they often toured together, so I thought it'd be fitting to play a bit of that. And, of course, we're going to finish up with Pink Floyd with Burning Bridges, and Peter knows all about that. But I'm talking to Peter from Absolute Facts. Peter, it's strange that you were talking about youth crime. We've had a couple of inquiries. Now, we don't expect you to spend huge amounts of time. I know your time is limited. If you could have a look at the percentage of violent crimes, if these figures are available, on the under 18 age group, and the over 18, so to see whether more violent crimes are being done by the younger ones, because we keep on hearing about these 13, 14-year-olds. But then if you've got time, if you could look at the non-violent ones, where there are just something else that, you know, whatever those crimes are the same thing, the under 18s and under, or over 18s, if you could just have a look at that. But again, you know, we don't expect you to be putting huge amounts of time in it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think we probably guess what the violent youth crime numbers would have to, you'd think they'd have to be on the increase, but I'll see if I can grab some statistics and some numbers. So, and then just quickly, Alan, just to finish off with the about the stealing vehicles. Yep. There was also a comment put up. I'm not sure how relevant that is, but if you have a manual car, yep, then perhaps the youth of today may not actually know how to drive a manual car. So
I think that's actually a pretty fair comment, but you can't buy a new manual car, they tell me.
Oh, okay. I don't know that, Alan.
Well, I don't know either, but
your fleet of five-year cars you've got, but
mate, mine's an old one on gas.
It's not, yeah, exactly.
But, well, I do wonder, because I don't know about you, but when I got my license, you had to pay extra. You know, I think it was $500, $1,000 extra to get an auto, but I don't know. I guess even if they did make a manual, you've probably got to pay more to buy the thing.
Yes, and in all honesty, Alan, do you reckon you could drive a manual car now?
I think I could, but I wouldn't want to.
I think it'd take a little bit of practice around a car park to get the hang of the clutch, to be quite honest with you, but never mind. Now, whilst on the topic of vehicles, this one came up, I think it might have even been today, which caught my eye and was quite concerning. Kids Safe Victoria have basically reviewed 36,000 child car seats and found that only 10% were actually correctly installed.
Gee,
which means 90% of child car seats fitted are incorrectly installed, and that's obviously a major concern.
Yeah.
And I notice they're referring to parents here as well, but perhaps for people like ourselves, it's probably something relevant to grandparents.
I was thinking of grandkids. Like, have you got grandchildren?
I have grandchildren, and I have a seat mounted in one of my vehicles, and we got it put in by a proper installer and paid $40 or whatever it was, and you know, money well spent when you're thinking about conveying your own grandchild around. But yeah, I think that's a staggering number, that 90% have been installed not installed correctly. I think that's a big concern. So.
And when you think of it, if you say that you paid $40 to have it done properly, I mean, that's not a lot of money when you're thinking of a child's life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for the sake of saying, yes, I can do it myself, and I'm sure there are people that are competent enough to do it themselves, but there's probably a large portion of the population who think they're competent enough to do it themselves and may actually not be. So,
when you're talking 90%, you're talking a lot of people, aren't you?
Yeah, I think that's a grave concern. And I'm actually quite surprised the article didn't mention grandparents as well as putting the onus on parents to make sure that they're fitted properly. Never mind. So one of the other articles I came across a little while ago, actually, was about Victoria losing more than 350 businesses every day, Alan. So basically people closing up, shutting their doors. You know, we're obviously fully aware of, you know, the cost pressures, you know, electricity's going up again, not related to business, but health insurance going up again, yet they're making record profits. So I don't get that one as well. But so the Bureau of Statistics are basically saying, I think it was 129,000 Victorian businesses have shut up in the last, I think that might be a three-year period.
Gee, that's a lot.
Yeah, in New South Wales, 106, they're running higher than Victoria. And it's, you know, just basically people have hung on for as long as they can, and at the end of the day,
and of course, a lot of those people
better off just pulling the pin.
Yeah, a lot of those people are mums and dads who stand to lose their home as well, don't they?
Yeah, particularly these days with the director's guarantees and things like that as well. You've got to be so careful. So, I thought that was rather not surprising, but rather disturbing news. And I like myself, I commend anyone who's still running a small business in the current environment, because it's an absolute challenge. And, you know, even you talk about vehicles and registration, insurance keeps going up. You know, all the other insurances that you've got to carry, that your public liability and professional indemnity, everything, it just keeps getting higher and higher every year.
It does.
And it's basically an impost, isn't it? So,
Peter, I'm going to chuck one question at you, and then I think we're going to have to just about get going. Apart from the mobile phone, and the ability with a photo, what in your opinion, in your job, now we're talking about just your job, has been the greatest technology, and a client, a listener asked me this, what's been the greatest technology advance for you other than the mobile phone?
Other than the mobile phone?
Yep.
Well, I'll go back to my little micro cassette and my dictaphone because that's probably my number one tool of the trade because I can yell and scream into that and take everything down and then, you know, type it up later when I've got a, when things have calmed down a little bit. So that, probably also say, although I don't use it that much, is I think the in-car cameras are pretty good tools as well. So the front and rear, cameras that are
the dash cams.
I think they're I wouldn't say the footage is as good as perhaps what it could be. I guess you get what you pay for, they're doing improve in time, but it's also the not only can it be useful from a surveillance and producing video point of view, it's also a defensive mechanism in case you're unfortunately involved in a in an accident, which may or may not be your fault. So,
well, I guess it's, I think it's a way of proving that, that it wasn't your fault, isn't it? Yeah, there, Peter.
Yeah, and, and you see a lot of police calling out the dash cam.
Yeah, dash I mean, when you think
it, out in the middle of
you're actually breaking up your phone, your picture is seized, and we you're breaking up, and I've just got to about go, but. Peter, again, thanks very much for your time. Peter's with his own company, Absolute Facts. We do appreciate the time you give to us, Peter. Tell us a quick little bit about Pink Floyd and Burning Bridges.
Yep, so that's off their seventh album, which is called Obscured by Clouds, which I was actually playing the other day on the weekend while I was doing some work. Had that on in the background. And that's pre-Dark Side of the Moon, of course, which most people would know. And they were really, really starting to hit their straps, I would argue, back then. And there's a, another album called Metal, which came out about in about the next sequence.
Yep.
And that's got a – if you ever want to have a bit of time off from DJ going, Alan, it's got a track called Echoes.
You're breaking up, Peter. What was that one?
So you can – You can have a break from the studio.
All right, Peter, you've just broken up. But look, thanks for your time again. Look forward to talking to you next month. Thanks, Peter. Bye.